Welcome to WISO Weekend, WISO's weekly radio magazine. I'm Jerry Kenney. On today's program, WISO News Director Nikki Dakota stops by to tell us about a great music event coming up at the DAI to benefit WISO. We'll also hear Nikki's in-studio interview with the Claudettes. Later in the program, Bill Felker with Poor Will's Miami Valley Almanac. Up first, WISO had two national stories appear on NPR last week. On Monday, a feature on the Doolittle Tokyo Raiders' final toast. And this past Wednesday, again on Morning Edition, WISO's Lewis Wallace reported on the effects of banking deserts. Here's that story.
You may have heard about food deserts in urban neighborhoods, places without supermarkets or access to healthy food options. Here's a related problem. Banking deserts. Losing a neighborhood bank can leave residents without basic financial services, and that can be especially hard on the elderly. From our member station WISO, Lewis Wallace reports on a recent branch closure in Dayton, Ohio that creates a banking desert nearly 5 miles wide.
In a strip mall parking lot on Dayton's west side, a young guy jumps out of the car to use the ATM next to a shuttered PNC Bank branch.
From here, I can't tell you the closest bank. I mean, how do you not have a bank?
Michael Booker lives nearby, and he happens to work as a bank teller in a suburb. So when he heard this PNC closed in August, he was concerned.
I know what we offer as a bank. I know the products and services that are beneficial to the community.
Services like home loans and financial advice. PNC's closure leaves this part of town a banking desert.
So we had our jobs leave, and so then we had our grocery store leave, and now we have our bank leave.
Catherine Crosby is with the City of Dayton Human Relations Council. She says not having a bank makes it hard to build in an area devastated by the loss of manufacturing jobs.
There continues to be this disinvestment in that side of town, and so people are saying, hey, when is the bleeding going to stop?
PNC says it closed the West Dayton branch because more customers are using digital banking. But almost all PNC's recent net closures are in areas where people make less than the national median. And it's not just PNC. While the total number of bank branches nationally has actually grown since 2006, the number in lower income areas continues to shrink. PNC officials wouldn't go on tape, but they say the company doesn't take closings lightly, although they won't reveal their criteria. Maria Coyne is with KeyBank. She says branch closings are just a part of the business.
And any good retailer would tell you, in a year when you're opening stores, you're probably also closing stores because you're going to follow population patterns and you're going to follow demand. And ultimately, you know, clients vote with their feet.
Coyne won't say whether KeyBank would consider opening a branch in West Dayton. And Catherine Crosby says that is what residents in this part of town desperately need.
There is still a community there that needs banking services. We just need to figure out what are the right banking services.
The city has talked to banks about setting up a virtual branch with a teller you talk to through a video screen. Or maybe having a mobile bank branch stop through the neighborhood, kind of like a food truck, but for banking. But meanwhile, people like 86-year-old Jesse Gooding, who's had a PNC account for 40 years, just have to travel further.
I'm not computer literate. Young people can make those changes easier than old folks.
Sitting in his quiet ranch house, he says losing the bank branch poses a hardship, but it's not a new one. He's been watching services trickle out of this part of town for decades.
Just all the businesses left. That's sad, but that's what's happened.
Just up the road, a sign on the old PNC door has pictures of moving boxes and directions to a new location, about 6 miles from Jesse Gooding's house. Visit us there, the sign says, for new ways to help you reach your goals. For NPR News, I'm Lewis Wallace in Dayton.
An ongoing dispute between the founder of Springfield's Rocking Horse Community Health Center and its board of directors reached a conclusion last week. An official statement from the board said that Dr. James Duffy no longer works there. WISO's Wayne Baker has the story.
Duffy founded the center in 1999 to serve families with little or no health insurance, and he's been very popular with patients. Recently, CEO Dana Engel, who has been there since 2007, left Rocking Horse for another job. Duffy can't comment on his own termination, but he says the board is in a time of transition.
That's a period of time in which the boards of nonprofits have to reassess their direction.
But many people are upset about Duffy's departure. A group of nearly 50 employees sent a fiery letter to the board accusing them of shifting to a more corporate, less community-based approach to care. Rocking Horse Board Chair Rob Baker says the board parted ways with Duffy due to philosophical differences.
The organization grew, certainly, and we did have some differences in terms of how best to achieve the mission.
Duffy's termination agreement does leave him the freedom to continue with his patients. He says he's looking to keep practicing medicine in the Clark County area. For WISO, I'm Wayne Baker reporting.
In this week's Politics Ohio, WISO News Director Emily McCord spoke with Ohio Public Radio's Joe Ingles about a projected $400 million savings expected from Medicaid expansion in the state. Not everyone agrees on what to do with the money.
We heard first from Springfield Republican Senator Chris Widener. He was on the controlling board that decided to expand Medicaid in the state, and he defended that decision by hyping up how savings could be used. And so what's he trying to push?
Well, Senator Widener has a plan that would take that $400 million in savings, and projected savings, we might say, from the Medicaid expansion, and it would put that into an additional income tax break. Now, you've got to remember, Ohio is already getting a 10% income tax break. This would put it around the 14% mark. Senator Widener says Ohioans have a tax burden that they should, you know, that our taxes, our income taxes need to be lowered in order to provide tax relief for Ohioans, but also to attract businesses into Ohio. So his idea is let's give it back to the people.
But someone like Dale Butland, he's with the liberal think tank Innovation Ohio, called this a shell game. What does he mean by that?
Well, the consensus is that since Governor Kasich has been in office, a lot of the burden of paying for local things like your taxes for fire, for police, for schools, a lot of the burden of paying for that, at least the Democrats contend, has shifted over to local communities. They point out that there was a huge cut for local government funds, and then you've got the money that was taken away through elimination of the estate tax and that sort of thing. They say, well, all of that has created this huge problem at the local level where local voters are being asked to vote on taxes, mostly property taxes, to fund their schools. So, you know, Dale Butland is saying what you're doing is you're cutting income taxes at the state level, but then these people, because they don't have enough money in their local communities to run basic services, then those schools, fire, whatever, they have to go to the voters and have tax hikes at the local level in order to make up for the loss of that income.
So what's he proposing?
Well, he wants to take that $400 million, and he would like to give it to schools. He points out that there are only four line items in the education budget that are more than $400 million. And he says, you know, if you give that to schools, you could have disadvantaged students in the state getting free preschool. You could have more of all-day kind of services to help out students. You could have reading services, amp that up. You could help with the third grade reading guarantee. He lists probably 20 different things that they could do with the money at the in the schools if they had that $400 million. And he's not opposed, actually, to having some of that money sent to the local communities for things like fire or police either. He says any part of it would be helpful to the schools. So, you know, he's willing to share the pot.
And are there different groups that are proposing other ideas?
Well, we've heard all kinds of ideas bandied about around here. There's an idea that the local governments should get more and that there would be some sort of split. But that's mostly a Democratic idea right now. And the Democrats are not in control in the legislature. So, but actually, Emily, none of these plans have really been given a whole lot of credence right now. You got to remember, we have a lot of conservatives out there who believe that we'll never see that $400 million savings from the Medicaid expansion. We've got the conservative think tank that is suing the state over Medicaid expansion at the Ohio Supreme Court. And if the Ohio Supreme Court rules that the controlling board could not do what they did as far as Medicaid expansion, this is a moot point.
I've been speaking with Joe Ingles with the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau. Thanks for being here.
Well, thank you for having me.
You're listening to WISO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO. I'm Jerry Kenney. Thanks for joining us. On November 27th, nearly 30 local musicians will gather and celebrate the music of The Band and the historic performances of The Last Waltz live on stage at the Dayton Art Institute's NCR Auditorium in Dayton. Proceeds from Such a Night, a celebration of the band's Last Waltz, will benefit WYSO. To tell us all about it, WYSO Music Director Nikki Dakota. Nikki, welcome.
Good morning, Jerry Kenney. We really have an amazing sort of example of community and coming together. And add to that, you know, so our public radio is just about the product of coming together. In this case, musically, you get this emergent property. When you get more than two, three musicians together, something happens about the output that is so much bigger than anything that we could do individually. And this is a perfect example of it. People who love WISO, people who love local music, putting this together. A big thanks to Jeff Opt, who is really the mastermind behind this great event, is decided to put on a great evening of music and make it a benefit for this public radio station. It's Thanksgiving Eve. So a lot of us, you know, are going to be in town anyway. Maybe we're welcoming family members, friends, and what a great opportunity to come out and celebrate some of the finest sort of rock and roll roots music made in the late, or I should say all the way through the 60s and into the 70s with this completely iconic band. They backed up Dylan. Of course, Dylan in The Last Waltz, the original Martin Scorsese documentary, Joni Mitchell, Neil Diamond was even in this. And these local Gem City musicians and beyond, sort of regional people coming together, each of these will play those roles. We'll have a Dylan character, a Joni Mitchell character, and they all come out and play with this amazing band. It's going to be a fabulous way to spend Thanksgiving Eve, and we just dearly hope that the Miami Valley will come and join us.
It sounds like a lot of work logistically to pull all of this together.
Oh, my heavens to Murgatroyd. I have such admiration and respect for Jeff Opt. He, in addition to being a huge fan of the Garden Station and the Yellow Cab building, he believes in Dayton music, and he just put the word out, and the musicians responded. They put on the first one just at the beginning of this year, last February of 2013, and it was Such a Night. So then, hence the name. And by the way, coming up throughout this week and the next, I'm going to be having many of the musicians who will be playing, stopping by excursions. I do hope that listeners will tune in to hear Steve Makovka, who's going to be playing accordion and singing for us. We've got Charlie Tipton, who figures prominently in this amazing gathering, as well as Paige Beller, and many, many more coming by to sort of pitch in and get the word out. I bet a great night. Jerry, there's links at the WISO page, wyso.org. Tickets are $15 in advance and $20 day of show, and all the proceeds benefit WYSO. And what a better place to see. There may be no other better place to see it than at the NCR stage at the Dayton Art Institute.
It sounds very cool, and we want to see everyone there. Nikki, before I let you go, I want to mention the music we have coming up in the background, the Claudettes. You spoke with them in the studio last week, and this morning we're going to play a good portion of that interview as well as spin some of their music. First, tell us a little bit about the Claudettes and your thoughts on meeting them.
Man, they just set my ears on fire. They're a duo, which is a rare thing, to have a duo in sort of modern, full-on, contemporary alt-rock music. But that's usually guitar, drums. In this case, it's piano, drums. Johnny Iguana is the pianist that just has chops from here to eternity, an amazing player. And he and the drummer make this big, big sound. They were our featured artists throughout the month of October and were kind enough to sit down with me before their show just passed on November 9th at Canal Street Tavern. And man, oh man, when you hear what they're saying and what they're playing, just keep in mind all this sound from two musicians and absolutely no studio trickery, and just fabulously good time, good feeling music, and all instrumental. I love it.
WYSO Music Director Nikki Dakota, thanks so much.
Jerry, always a pleasure. Thank you.
Here's Nikki's interview with the Claudettes on WYSO.
As the Memorex version of our guest in the studio today, I'm so pleased to welcome to WYSO a great man of piano fame and accomplishment, Johnny Iguana, and Michael Caskey. Johnny and Michael, thanks for being here today.
All right.
My pleasure.
We've been enjoying your CD throughout the month of October of 2013. I know it just came out earlier this month, and your label, Yellow Dog Records, was kind enough to sort of agree to hook us up in advance, and you guys were in on that as well. And it is the first time in the history of my now decade-long tenure as music director at YSL that I've ever picked an instrumental disc as a CD of the month. But it's
it's instrumental?
There's not a human voice on it.
We must have forgotten.
An oversight. I had this nagging feeling as we were finishing up.
We forgot something.
Whoa. But what I like about it is that not only did I not mind the lack of human voice, there's a lack of a bass player. There's a lack of a horn section. There is actually an overabundance and a perfect abundance of piano and just drums. And I'd like to just ask you how you imagined that that would ever work.
Yeah, if there's one thing about us you could say, it's that we're lacking.
I thought it was
lackeys. We lack this. We lack this. Lactose intolerant in some cases. There was, as you know, Michael's heard me yammer on about before, that when I was 15 or something, I heard these tracks that were Otis Band and S.P. Leary, just piano and drums recordings that were originally on a compilation called Chicago, The Blues Today. It was a series of those. And they're just so good. And it's so much music just for two guys. And I kind of had gotten to a point where I wanted to try that. And it's a challenge to just make not just a track or two, but, you know, a whole album that I think is a good listen and not, you know, Dellsville. You know, I mean, you know, but I always been referencing Booker T a lot lately. Like, why did nobody complain about Booker T being instrumental? Why did everyone jump on all the instruments? It's almost like so arcane to be instrumental, you know. But, music speaks so much. I feel like a lot of times it sounds so trite and, you know, cliched, but I feel like music can speak better than I can speak, you know, and I think I can get points across through just music, you know, instrumental music, and I like trying.
The fact that you don't have a bass player and a horn section, it has no bearing, and I want to know how it is that you two can make so much sound. It's delightful and heartening, and also a pretty small van pack.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. I was really impressed with a lot of the music that Johnny had played for me, and also what was enamored by the notion of trying to make a big sound with just two guys. And from the very start, the focus was on the sonics of it. But of course, that has everything to do with what we're playing and what we're not playing. And just a quick musical discovery that we made was that we don't always have to be playing the same thing all the time. In fact, to cover enough ground musically, it's often rather important that we do not. If he's playing one musical figure, I should be
meaning
playing,
pattern, more or
yeah,
less.
Yeah, one pattern, one thing. I should perhaps present the counterpoint to that. And all of that sounds maybe sort of cerebral when we're talking about the kind of, you know, hopefully just good feeling music that we want to get across. But that has entered mindfully into the equation. I mean, there are ways to make a big sound even when it's just two people.
I agree. I've often thought that music is like math, or at least geometry, that there are shapes. That's funny you used the word mm-hmm. shape in that. So mm-hmm. I get it. I wanted to listen to a little bit of a tune that really has stuck out to me on the album. It's a track that just struck me as, well, it's called Tide Pool, and it's kind of like Bach meets Jerry Lee Lewis.
All right.
There's like a Baroque rockabilly quality to this song, and I'd like to hear a little bit of it before, though. Could you talk a little bit about how that song came together?
Yeah, that one, I mean, the you know, where the tune starts, it's pretty clear what it is. It really just kind of gets people's necks moving, you know, it's a funky little number. And then as with a lot of the other songs, you know, when you get to the, you know, usually you'd have in a song, you'd have a verse and a chorus and a bridge if it's a rock song or pop song. And in these cases, we usually have an A section and a B section and then maybe a C section. In this case, there's really just an A section. Oh, no, there is an A and a B section. But then when it came time for the middle section there, just what sort of happened was just going into this, I guess, is it 6/8? Is that what it is there? It goes to this other time signature and gets kind of impressionistic and lost in the forest, you know. And I mean, I've spent a lot of time, you know, the last few years I've gotten into phases where I'm either, you know, I had all my grandparents die and I really suddenly got into these standards, books of pop standards, and I was playing, you know, Hoagy Carmichael and Irving Berlin songs. I just really enjoyed that, almost because I felt retroactively I wish I had learned those songs while they were alive, because they would have loved to sit there in the room while and sing the songs that they grew up singing, you know. So a little nostalgia there. I started playing those. And then also I've had years where I sit there playing a lot of Satie and Chopin and things on the piano, and all the while being in blues bands and rock bands. And so there's a lot of different things I'm into at any given time, but I usually have a year or 2 years where I'm particularly into playing something. So all that, you know, in that song, what comes out in the bridge, I didn't decide to go to something totally different than the rest of the song. And I think it, when we play in a blues club, it sort of makes me feel like this is risky. Like when we get to this section here, there's nothing blues about this part at all. But I also don't think it sounds shocking. If everything that the song's evolved into feels just very natural to me. And it felt unnatural for me to not listen to those messages I was getting to go to this, you know, this idea in this section. So yeah.
Musical messages coming in with the tide. It's Tide Pool. We're with the Claudettes on 91.3 WYSO. Resolve it. You don't hit them. You don't get us back. They leave us hanging and wanting that next song.
I always leave them wanting more.
Old trick. Oldest trick.
Oldest trick in the book.
We're talking with the Claudettes live in studio. That is Johnny Iguana and Michael Caskey. The new album is called Infernal Piano Plot. Hatched. That's the title track in, among another of my favorites on this record. So, is it a plot? Will we be taken over by the piano?
Yeah. I shouldn't really talk any more about that. We should go on to the next question.
In a media situation here. It's a great record. You can find it on Yellow Dog Records, as a matter of fact, and you can keep tabs on the band in general at their website, theclaudettes.com. And that's just spelled like you'd think, theclaudettes.com. And I just love this record. I just want to thank you for a good time. My house is cleaner because of this record.
Woo!
Because you threw away all your other records because they can't compete with this one, I understand. It's
that's
a lot more space.
That's the spirit.
This is get up and go music. This is go somewhere, do something music. And I really, really appreciate it. Johnny Iguana, thank you for being here.
Well, thank you.
Michael Caskey, always a pleasure. Thank you.
Pleasure is mine. You're welcome.
We're going to go out with the land of precisely three dances. Gentlemen, it has been my pleasure.
Music from the Claudettes on WISO. You're listening to WISO Weekend on 91.3 FM. And thanks for joining us online at WISO.org. I'm Jerry Kenny. Temperatures took a free fall last week in a bitter reminder for some that a change of seasons is underway. To offer his perspective on it all, our very own Bill Felker.
This is Bill Felker with Poor Will's Almanac for the second week of late fall. I'm up at 6:30 in the morning, sitting in the greenhouse. Middle November, the end of leaf drop. The sky, half dawn, light and dark equal through the fast gray nimbostratus clouds and the storm. The wind is hard from the southeast. The pattern of the gusts and rain creates a shape of its own, harsh like pebbles or hail, then soft and sweeping and blending, retreating. After a few minutes, quiet. Then more squalls come pelting the house, surging at me passionately, pushing towards my chair, the sound measuring the speed and the size and quantity of the force. The most savage attacks shatter the raindrop against the window, and my excitement increases with the intensity of the pounding, which almost becomes too fervent, and I'm growing restless, kept at this high climactic plateau. Then the pressure suddenly eases. The cloudburst ends. I can see the tall poplars swaying a block away. And instead of the wind-given voice and revealed by the rain, instead of its insistent drumming and clattering, I hear it rushing in the bare branches and singing in the crevices and corners of the buildings and the fences around me. A few feet from where I sit, chickadees dive and hang in the feeders, glide with the rhythm of the air at ease in the swells of the wind. A small leak in the roof lets an intermittent drop of water fall on the indoor plants. The intrusion keeps a different time than that of the wind and rain outside, measuring how warm and dry and still I am here, with the fire in the wood stove and red and lavender geraniums and impatiens, all the silent warmth of summer collected and protected and safe. This is Bill Felker with Poor Will's Almanac. I'll be back again next week with notes for the third week of late fall. In the meantime, listen for the rain.
Bill Felker contributes to newspapers nationwide, including the Yellow Springs News. Bill resides in Yellow Springs. Poor Will's Almanac is also available as a podcast at WYSO.org.
That's it for this week's edition of WYSO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO, Yellow Springs, Dayton, Springfield, and online at WYSO.org. WYSO is a community service of Antioch College for the Miami Valley and beyond. Coming up next on WYSO, The Book Nook.